This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
First things first, happy belated Father's Day to everyone who was celebrating or who celebrated their dads yesterday. And appropriately then, our first story is actually about a father, specifically Ziauddin Yousafzai. That name might sound pretty familiar to you because his daughter's kind of famous. It's Malala Yousafzai's father, of course. And he spoke to Time magazine about his journey into feminism, especially through the lens of how he raised his daughter and how he chose to have and start his family.
So in the article, he Ziauddin spoke about his experience growing up in the patriarchal society in Pakistan. One experience he recounts is that his mother was never ever recognized as an individual or recognized by her name, but rather as a mother of her son and the wife of her husband. He said that that shaped his approach to fatherhood and the principles that he and his wife, Tora Pakai, decided to take to build an egalitarian family. They both raised their sons and daughters, the same way.
So he also admitted that he didn't actually hear the word feminist until he was 45 and didn't realize that that was what he'd been trying to spread and trying to do in his family and community for years. He believes that fathers have a crucial role to play in the fight for women's rights, coming in second to women's voices. And it was a really interesting article to read. Again, it's on Time magazine if you wanted to check that out. It's called What Being Malala's Father Taught Me About Feminism. And it reminded me also yesterday that I follow this this account on Instagram. It's about books on subways. So it's basically photos of readers on subways and then them talking about their books. And this actually was a photo of a gentleman who was saying that, my daughters have been encouraging me to read more women because they pointed out that all my idols when it came to writing were actually men.
Right.
And my daughters also taught me about my privilege as a man, about white privilege and how he's like, you know, you can always tell the difference. And this was, you know, that reader on the street. You can always tell the difference between fathers who have daughters and people who don't. And I thought that that was really interesting. And it chimed quite neatly with this piece from Ziauddin Yousafzai about what it is that daughters can teach you.
So for his take, I thought what was quite interesting was the fact that he actually doesn't really know why he decided to get into that journey into promoting feminism, even both within his society and family. But he does say that there is also the misunderstanding, or rather he doesn't understand also why other men simply accept the values that's been passed down to them for centuries. So that was just something interesting to think about. You know, you can live in a country where you have very strong Me Too movements, you have very strong suffragette movements, but then you find that at the end of the day, there is still men who don't necessarily advocate for the equal rights of women, even though they have daughters, even though they have wives, even though they have mothers.
So what is it about Ziauddin Yousafzai that changed that,
yeah,
right? I also have no idea. And that's true, because he himself can't clearly articulate. He's just like, fairness was important to me. And
it
that's
feels
why,
right.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to do that. So I don't know. I also don't know how much of that we can translate into other experiences, except to say that the main thing here, I suppose, is recognizing that your daughter, a woman, is a person as well. I think accepting that personhood, accepting the fact that this is another human who also deserves fair, equitable treatment right from the very beginning, right from the start, you're not going to give preferential treatment to your other kids just because they're male. I think that goes a long way. And that echoes for us here too, because we are obviously, it's not necessarily the same, but in more traditional households, I know that it's not uncommon for people to still have preferences for their sons, right? Because they're the ones who'll be carrying on the name. They're just, it's just ingrained in people. Oh, sons are the ones that like you treasure. And I don't, it is taking a while to change completely. I don't know if we're going to get there anytime soon.
Though it's interesting that you brought up that point about, once husbands become fathers, they tend to also then pick up on feminism because, you know, they want their daughter to be seen as equals. They want their daughter to be, to have all equal opportunities as their sons might or will have access to. Though I think some critics would say that, well, you already married a woman in the first place, and that would already give you that entry into understanding what it's like being a woman if you have listened to your wife properly, for example.
I mean, presumably you also grew up with a mother. There's a lot of things. You probably have shared classrooms with women. You've probably worked with women. I'm not sure what it is exactly, but I don't think... None of that is to say that there's anything wrong with fathers realizing in a very real, immediate sense, I seriously want to raise my daughter in a fair way. I think that's a beautiful thing.
It is, it is. And if you just look up that piece on time.com, it's titled What Bima Lala's Father Taught Me About Feminism. It's a really, really good read.
Now, we have on the line with us Yuren Chung, Advocacy Officer with the Women's Aid Organization, to talk about this a little bit more. Ren Chung, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you've worked in issues relating to women's rights and feminism for years. You're a father yourself. How has being a feminist informed your approach towards being a dad and a husband?
Yeah, I think, you know, when people say feminism benefits everyone, you know, I think one important aspect of how it benefits people is that really it helps you become a better person. I think everyone wants to see themselves as a good person. You know, if you're a father, you want to see yourself as a good father, good partner, good husband, and so on. So I think feminism really helps, and I know it has helped me become a better partner, and hopefully it'll help me become a better father as well. And one way in which it does that, I think for me, the most important thing, that lesson that I've taken away and how it's informed my approach as a father, currently my firstborn is 7 months old now. It's really just to ensure that, you know, so me and my wife were both working. And if we follow a more traditional or patriarchal kind of division of labor, that most or even all the sort of responsibilities of taking care of a child would fall upon my wife. You know, we know that's the case for many, many couples. And if we're both working, and on top of that, my wife is then expected to take care of the child as well, that's not really a fair allocation of fair division of work. So for me, really, it's, you know, one important way that I think feminism has helped me, has made me think, has helped me really think about what it means to be a good partner, a good partner to my wife, as we both share in parenting. And, you know, this is something that I think, you know, it's a question that many couples are asking. We know that, so Kuzana Research Institute did a study last year, and they estimated that there are 2.5 million women who are currently not in the workforce, and they cite household and family responsibilities. And if you look at men, there are only 70,000. So we see here, you know, if more men would take up a bit more of household responsibilities, then, you know, a big portion of these 2.5 million women perhaps would prefer and choose to join the workforce as well. So there's a moral case here as to how feminism helps us become a better person by trying to behave in a way that's fairer, fairer to your partner. And I think there's also an economic case as well. We know that labor force participation of women is quite low in Malaysia, about 55%, and that's globally, that's a very low number. And the economic case is that, you know, if we were to close the gap between the genders in terms of labor force participation, the economic pie will grow for everyone. And a study done by World Bank in 2012 estimated that GDP would increase by about 13%. GDP per capita would increase about 13% if we close the gap. So there's also an economic case as to how feminism can help us.
Have you noticed people reacting poorly to the word feminist or feminism? And why do you think, I guess, it continues to be politicized?
Yeah, I think there's two reasons. So one is that it's a matter of people have different understandings of the term. So, you know, perhaps some people may immediately associate feminism with something in their mind that is negative. I think it's useful to define, and you can't really define it precisely, but I think a basic definition of feminism is the belief that men and women are equal, should be equal, or women and women should be equal. And the recognition that currently in the world we live in today, that equality does not exist in fact. Therefore, we need to take some kind of positive, some kind of action to equalize the situation. I think that's kind of one reason. The other reason, of course, is that, you know, feminism would challenge existing power structures. So some people who may find themselves or think that they find themselves in a position of relative power may feel threatened by a value that would equalize resources and power between the two genders and other genders.
Renchong, one thing that I guess is a personal problem of mine, something that just constantly irritates me, is this idea that men are often pled with to consider the humanity of women through this whole idea of, hey, imagine it's your mother, imagine it's your sister, imagine it's your daughter. Is that a helpful lens to have? Or is there another way to think about this? Is there another way to ask, you know, half the world's population to consider the humanity of the other half?
I think it's helpful in a sense that if it works, then we should, in a way, welcome that kind of persuasion. So if by using these kind of arguments, we're able to convince more men to see and realize that they also have an interest in gender equality, then I think that's a useful message. But definitely it cannot be the only message. And I think really that's another way in which feminism helps us think about what actually is a more equal, a fairer, and morally just situation. I mean, quite a well-known thought experiment is the veil of ignorance. Right? So, you know, if we were to not know our situation going into the world, we wouldn't know what gender would be, what status would be, and so on. We would want to, the argument is that we would tend to want a world that is more equal so that we would not find ourselves in a situation that is so worse off than other people. So if we apply that kind of thinking, I think we'll come to the conclusion that, we do want to live in a world that is more equal and including more equal between the gender. So I don't think we need to have a daughter, have a wife to fully empathize, to fully believe in the equality of all persons. But it doesn't seem that contributes towards more equality. And in that sense, I think it's nothing so wrong with bringing that kind of argument up as well.
So let's talk about paternity leave. The Ministry of Human Resources says 3 days, but the WAO is fighting for 7 days. Tell us why WAO is doing so.
Yeah, so we think paternity leave is good. We definitely need paternity leave. One reason is sort of just like a logistical thing. You know, a child is born, and there's quite a lot of stuff that needs to happen. So there's the medical things, medical stuff. There's legal things, registration. So also you need time to do those things. That's I think the basic, just kind of the basic reason. But there are more important reasons as well. One, I think fathers want to bond with children. It's an important moment in their lives, in men's lives, to welcome their newborn into this world. But I think most importantly, perhaps, is fathers have a very important role to play when it comes to supporting their wives. We know that, of course, during the confinement period, it's a very important time for the mother to recover physically as well as cope emotionally. And I think in the past, we've the more traditional way of approaching this is having perhaps the grandparents, right? So the mother's parents, mom, to come and kind of help out. But I think, increasingly, we cannot rely on that. First, some people may not have parents to help out. And secondly, it's not really fair to expect, we shouldn't expect, the grandmother to be on call and sort of on the drop of the hat come and spend the day and night with the baby. So fathers here play a super important role when it comes to supporting their wife. So why do we say 7 days? We think that, really, we're not saying 7 is ideal. I think ideally it would be longer. But I think it's quite clear that 3 is too short. 3 is simply too short. And the reason why we propose 7 is that we feel it's a reasonable minimum first step to take. So we benchmark it, say, look at the public sector in Malaysia, government, civil servants get 7 days paternity leave. We look at other countries in the region. Singapore currently gives 14 days paternity leave. It was actually 10 and it was increasing. It was 7 days, and now fathers can get up to 14 days. I think Cambodia as well is a 10-day paternity leave. So the reason why we're saying 7 really is that, let's just start somewhere. 7 seems to be a reasonable benchmark in terms of Malaysia and our neighboring countries. But of course, in the long run, we want to think about other kinds of concepts like parental leave, not just paternity leave, but longer-term parental leave. And that's a conversation I think we need to start at some point in the future.
Ranjan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And just one more thing. We do have a petition to urge the government to introduce a 7-day paternity leave. If you go to WAO's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, it's at Women's Aid org. Please go there, sign up petition, and share it so that the government gets the message that this is something that will benefit a lot of people and something that a lot of people want.
Cool. Thank you so much. That was Yurin Chung, advocacy officer with the Women's Aid Organization. And since the line was cutting in and out a little bit, just to say again, that petition that's calling for the Ministry of Human Resources to introduce at least 7 days paternity leave is up on the WAO Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. So you can look that up. You can sign it. Let us know your thoughts when it comes to, well, I suppose being a dad. Are you a feminist dad? Is that the kind of value that you have infused into your family? You can call us and share 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.